Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. International law professor Francis A. Boyle joins us for a look at the START talks between U.S. President Obama and Russian President Medvedev. What were the successes or failures, and what was going on behind the scenes? Francis A. Boyle has advised nations and societies at risk, including Palestinians and the people of Bosnia and Herzegovina at the ICC, International Criminal Court, and he advised the people of Chechnya in their claim of genocide against Putin's Russia. Francis A. Boyle is a leading expert on the crisis weapons of mass destruction create. He drafted the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 and the American Implementing Legislation for the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. Francis A. Boyle wrote a post-9/11 legal analysis of America's nuclear war policy and the so-called War on Terrorism. That is one of his many books advising peace groups, nations, and others on questions of war and peace, human rights, and international law. We spoke with him July 6th. And asked him to go over the history of the START talks and fill us in on his first impressions of the current ones.
I've written a book on this called The Criminality of Nuclear Deterrence. I go through the whole history of U.S. policy in the nuclear age from the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki up until the advent of the Bush administration's repudiation of the ABM Treaty. But what is critical is this. At the beginning of the nuclear arms control negotiations under Nixon and Kissinger, and with their chief negotiator, Gerard Smith, you can read his memoirs, Double Talk, it was agreed between the United States and their Soviet equivalent negotiators and leaders that the only way there could be progress on limiting and reducing offensive nuclear weapon was to have drastic limitations on defensive nuclear weapons. And so for that reason, as a result of the SALT I negotiations, you had two documents, the ABM Treaty, Anti-Ballistic Missile Systems Treaty, that limited both sides to two ABM missile sites, one surrounding their national capital and one surrounding a strategic nuclear weapon site. Later on, that was modified to reduce it to one site on each side at their option. The Soviets chose to defend Moscow with their ABM system. We chose to defend a ICBM site at Grand Forks, North Dakota, although eventually realizing it was a total waste of time, effort, and money. That bargain then led to the SALT I agreement, the SALT II treaty, START I, START II, and the SORT treaty signed by President Bush Jr. The problem, as I pointed out in my book, was that the neoconservatives, here typified by Wolfowitz, neoconservative to the core, worked very hard and with Rumsfeld's support to repudiate the ABM treaty, knowing full well it would kick the leg out from under any type of strategic arms limitation agreements and strategic arms reduction agreements. And as I document in my book then, what they did was use the excuse of the terrible tragedies on September 11th, 2001, as a pretext to pull the United States government out of the ABM Treaty. And that is where we stand now, that the Russian government is taking the position, as we speak today, at least according to the latest wire service account, that we cannot go forward with strategic arms reductions unless we deal with the ABM systems that the United States government proposed to put into Europe under President Bush Jr. And I believe, at least legally and politically and policy-wise, they're correct, because that was the start of the SALT era we've had on nuclear weapons, arms control, and reduction agreements under both Democrats and Republicans until the neocon Bush Jr. people, pulled the plug on them. Now, the problem is that just before going to Moscow, one of the Obama administration's resident neocons McFaul from the Hoover Institute out in California, another nest for neocons, said there is no way we are going to go along with eliminating the ABM systems that we plan to put into the Czech Republic and Poland. And that is a serious problem. If this is going to be our position, I don't know. Maybe the Russians will truckle under, but I don't really see that happening, given what is at stake here and the entire history of nuclear arms control negotiations going back to 1968 with Nixon and Kissinger. Now, there was a communique by Obama and Medvedev indicating they've agreed for substantial reductions in numbers, but there was no agreement on the ABM system, and that has been relegated to a committee to be studied. So we have to be very careful here in following what's going on, because the neocons still want to, you know, have their ABM system and pretty much make strategic nuclear arms control reduction agreements impossible, unless, of course, the Russians decide to capitulate. Maybe the Russians will. I really don't know. I can't say. But certainly the position announced by McFaul before he took off to Moscow is just irrational, unreasonable, and dangerous. We have to have an agreement eliminating or neutering those Bush ABM systems in Europe, and then we can move forward with genuine nuclear arms reductions, which we certainly need. Humanity needs it. For some reason, unbeknownst to me, Obama has designated McFaul as his top expert on Russia. So we have a neoconservative hawk who is Obama's top expert on Russia. Now, I could give you the name of five different people who would be reasonable and balanced and forthcoming on dealing with the Russians, but certainly not McFaul.
Michael A. McFaul, he also has taken policy positions with someone else that I know you've mentioned, Francis Fukuyama.
Is at Johns Hopkins School of International Affairs, another so-called academic institution, but basically populated throughout by the neocons. Indeed, Wolfowitz was dean at the Johns Hopkins School before he then became the Deputy Secretary of Defense under Rumsfeld. So it's clear that McFaul, working with Fukuyama, working with Wolfowitz, are all part of the neocon cabal, and is right there as special assistant to President Obama on Russia.
McFaul, Fukuyama, they've been arguing that they're promoting democracy and human rights in Russia and elsewhere.
They don't believe in democracy and human rights. It's a joke. I mentioned to you before, I went to the University of Chicago, the home of all the neocons with Wolfowitz and all the rest of these people. They couldn't care less about democracy and human rights. This is window dressing for control and domination. And when you hear people like McFaul and Fukuyama talking about democracy and human rights, you know what they're really talking about is regime change, which they have tried to do now in Iran. It does not seem to have worked, although it certainly has worked to destabilize Iran. This is not to justify any repression there by the mullahs in Iran. But hey, if they're interested in democracy and human rights, why aren't they doing it here in the United States of America, where we have the Obama administration continuing each and every police state tactic and practice that the Bush Jr. administration put in place, and not abandoning any one of them? Every one of these police state tactics that Bush Jr. put in place, starting with the USA Patriot Act on up, is still being implemented by the Obama administration. And now the Obama people are saying, well, we are considering adopting a system for preventive detention across the board for alleged terrorists, which even Bush didn't go that far. And yet today, you will note in the New York Times, the Financial Times, Obama has the chutzpah to criticize Russia, saying we want fair trials over here in Russia. Well, to what extent do we have fair trials here in the United States? Certainly not in Guantanamo. We have nothing but a kangaroo court system down there, which Obama is going to continue. We now have the Obama proposals to institute preventive detention across the board, even here in the United States of America, basically importing the kangaroo court system from Guantanamo into the United States itself. So you really can't take any of these statements by these neocons that any of them could care less about democracy and human rights. You know, they've done the best they can for 8 years of the Bush Jr. administration to destroy democracy and human rights here in America. And we lawyers are still fighting back in court because instead of abandoning and reversing any of these policies, the Obama administration has continued every one of them.
President Obama and President Medvedev have agreed that the U.S. will also now have a bilateral commission. It includes Homeland Security, Agriculture, FEMA, and other U.S. offices, and has representatives now who will meet with their counterparts in Russia. A meeting is scheduled for September, in fact. Are we seeing negotiations on the Mideast and corporate policies, talks about the two nations' economies that are really more crucial in terms of Obama policy? To what extent do you approve of this, and to what extent is it also familiar as perhaps what we might call pipeline economics?
Well, it's clear, at least, you know, from my perspective as a law professor, someone who's followed American foreign policy professionally now for 40 years, it's certainly better than what happened in the Bush Jr. administration toward the end, where there were no negotiations. We were out there provoking Russia. We encouraged Georgia to attack South Ossetia, and there were basically diktats against Russia. So the fact that they've set up this bilateral commission, I guess, is a positive sign. It really, again, goes back to the origins of détente under Nixon and Kissinger, that we saw these types of commissions and things being established at that time. And let us remember, Nixon and Kissinger were not liberal Democrats. They were realpolitik Republicans. But they did move forward, attempt to move forward, on a constructive basis with Russia. So I'm not sure what will come of this bilateral commission. There will probably be a lot of agreements in these areas that are feel-good agreements and will look good on paper and in public relations and certainly change the tenor from what we saw at the end of the Bush Jr. administration when Putin said these are the worst relations we've ever had with the United States. But the critical issues, as you pointed out, are we going to either eliminate or neuter the ABM system in Europe? You know, what is our position going to be toward Iran? It appears on Afghanistan, Putin and Medvedev have decided that it's in their interest to let us do their dirty work for them in Afghanistan and let us get tied down in Afghanistan, just as we did to them in the Carter administration under Brzezinski, when Brzezinski would later publicly brag that effectively he enticed the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan. Obviously, there's some discomfort there in Russia. They don't want to see the U.S. with a permanent presence in Central Asia. But, of course, that is our objective. So to get access to all the oil and gas in Central Eurasia there. And again, this does go back to Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard. And remember, Brzezinski was Obama's mentor at Columbia, where Brzezinski in The Grand Chessboard said, whoever controls Central Eurasia controls Eurasia, and whoever controls Eurasia controls the world. I think that is the real thrust of our policy here toward Central Eurasia. You know, the Russians, I'm not going to sit here and try to read their intentions one way or the other. But again, I think we could make significant progress on a variety of issues across the board if there were to be reasonable good faith negotiations by the Obama administration. Perhaps today is the start, and I guess that's certainly better than where we were under the Bush Jr. administration, where, as you recall from one of our previous interviews, Bush Jr. publicly threatened World War III directed toward Putin after he had just visited Iran. And Putin, then the president, responded threatening another Cuban Missile Crisis over proposed U.S. ABM systems in Europe. does it very dangerous type of situation where you had the two most powerful nuclear-armed countries in the world, where their presidents were making these types of open public threats against each other. You would have had to go back to the late 1930s or something to find that type of behavior going on. So I guess we'll have to see, will Obama jettison the ABM systems despite McFaul's advice, or will he continue to hold on to them? Very similar to the Reykjavik conference between Reagan and Gorbachev, where Gorbachev made an offer to eliminate nuclear weapons across the board, not just to reduce them, but to eliminate them, on condition that Reagan eliminate his proposal for the Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars. And Reagan refused. You know, it was just preposterous, incredible. Well, we have to understand then these ABM systems in Europe are really the son of Star Wars. And that's really what is holding things up here. And I really don't know who Obama has around him giving him this type of historical perspective. Because of his top guy on Russia at the White House, he's getting terrible advice.
And McFaul, of course, is the one who has been bringing in, at Obama's request, Muslims for Obama to meet with. These are largely people, at this point, as far as we know, New York Times reporting, from the financial sector.
Right. McFaul organized that Muslim meeting allegedly as a run-up to Obama's speech in Cairo, which, if you study the speech carefully, there really was nothing in there. It was public relations exercise, feel good, but it did not indicate there would be any substantive change of U.S. foreign policy toward the Middle East or the Muslim world.
You know, we've seen a budding rumor mill recently. Israel may or may not be able to use its newly powerful submarines in Turkish territory. A report coming out about the U.S. and Israel possibly using Saudi airspace. But certainly, we're talking about a military apparatus that has shifted so that we might actually better discuss new U.S. weapons systems in Southwest Asia, right?
That is correct. Globally, what we're seeing, I would suggest, is this. The United States, from the dawn of the nuclear age, has always had a war plan for the first use of nuclear weapons, a first strike. If you're interested, Professor Michio Kaku has written a book on this, To Win a Nuclear War. And now, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, it is in sight, the achievement of this capability. I went through many of the numbers in my book, The Criminality of Nuclear Deterrence of a First Strike, namely what would be left over on the Soviet side after a U.S. first strike. And it was clear that they were going to need an ABM system to mop up whatever was left, even assuming that could be done. Since I wrote that analysis, of course, things have gotten worse on the part of the Russians. Indeed, it's not just me saying this. There was an article in Foreign Affairs published by the Establishment Council of Foreign Relations that is pretty much neoconservative these days, making the same point that the United States government is moving toward a first strike capability and ABM systems are critical. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, all right, but would we be so foolish as to launch a first strike? That's not the issue. The issue is we, with the deployment of these ABM systems, would have the capability to launch a first strike, and if the theoretical capability. And so in the event of another crisis with Russia along the lines of the Cuban Missile Crisis, we would be able to threaten a first strike directly or indirectly in order to work our will on Russia. This was analyzed at great length by Thomas Schelling in his writings. Schelling taught at Harvard when I was there getting my PhD, and he looked at the Cuban Missile Crisis and what enabled the United States to prevail in the Cuban Missile Crisis. We had nuclear superiority. Despite Kennedy's propaganda of a missile gap, we had clear-cut nuclear and conventional superiority, so we prevailed. And Schelling called this compelling as opposed to deterrent. Namely, with the appearance of a first strike nuclear capability or superiority, we could compel our adversaries to to do our will in the event of a crisis. And that, I believe, is the objective now with the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's one of compellence. Namely, we deploy the ABM systems in Europe. We have ABM now in Alaska and out in California. We also have ABM systems on Navy ships, the Aegis, that can be deployed around the world. And we make it clear to the Soviet Union in the event of a crisis, like what happened recently last summer in Georgia, that we have the capability for a first strike, and you better understand it, and you better back down. So that, I believe, is what is really going on here. And, of course, I would hope your listeners would agree, this is extremely dangerous. This guy Schelling was a big supporter of the Vietnam War. He has another theory, the rationality of irrationality, namely that it's rational for the United States government to appear to be completely irrational in dealing with our adversaries so that they become so terrified about what we would do that they will capitulate to us. President Nixon agreed with this philosophy and instructed Kissinger to carry out. So, you know, we have madmen here who have devised these strategic nuclear policies, and I regret to say, certainly under Bush Jr., they were carrying them out. I remember I was an undergraduate at the University of Chicago while studying international relations, while Wolfowitz was there getting his PhD in international relations for the entire debate over the ABM treaty. And Wolfowitz's mentor there, a fellow named Wolfstetter from the RAND Institute, these are the real hardcore neocons, the Dr. Strangelove type, was adamantly against the ABM treaty, was in favor, actually, of ABM nuclear weapon systems, and was against nuclear arms control. Fortunately, that position did not prevail until Wolfowitz came to power under Bush Jr. and got rid of the ABM treaty, which was Wolfstetter's objective 40 years ago. So that's where we stand now, and it doesn't look good that McFaul is in there continuing with the same Dr. Strangelove mentality going back directly to Wolfstetter and before that RAND, where the original Dr. Strangelove, Herman Kahn, worked. Again, maybe with Obama, saner voices will prevail. If you read this article he wrote as an undergraduate at Columbia, maybe there is some hope there with Obama himself, and he will listen to more reasonable, decent people about the future here. But certainly the statement by McFaul saying they were not going to give up the ABM, and they were not going to give up integrating Georgia and Ukraine in NATO, which again is just simply continuing the policy, not of containment, but rollback, that was in effect under John Foster Dulles in the 1950s under President Eisenhower. That's certainly not a very productive way to proceed. I think it's extremely dangerous.
How will these missile talks affect U.S. policy on the wars that we're waging in Southwest Asia, if at all?
Right. It's already been reported that the United States government wants to trade or consider trading its ABM systems for Russian support for more drastic economic sanctions, if not military action, against Iran. At least Russia so far has said, we're not going to trade it. This goes back to Henry Kissinger's philosophy of linkage, that, well, we can take something completely unrelated to negotiations and link it in order to get more leverage. But we really will have to see what the Russians decide to do. Remember, Russia invaded Iran at the beginning of the 19th century. There's no love lost there between Russia and Iran one way or the other. Obviously, if Obama is willing to give them a high enough price, they very well might sell Iran out. We simply don't know. But that is the type of bargaining going on behind the scenes. And I mean, even the New York Times and the Financial Times admit that, yeah, they're in there, Obama and his people are in there trying to get Russian support on their policy towards Iran, which right now seems to be one of threat and provocation, and applying drastic economic sanctions, perhaps leading to a military confrontation, which we had repeatedly under the Bush Jr. administration. So I guess the question is, will Russia go along with it? And what price would they extract from us to do so? I mean, I could see, you know, a guy like McFaul saying, okay, you support us on Iran across the board, and we will put on ice the ABM system and Georgia and the Ukraine joining NATO. And the question is, what would Putin say to that? And we have to remember, Putin is really in charge over there. Medvedev is pretty much a figurehead, his guy. And Putin was former head of the KGB. You know, once KGB, always KGB. I was up against the Russians for the Chechen government, and before that for the Lithuanian government. I have no illusions about who they are or how they operate. That being said, however, as you correctly pointed out, we have existential shared interests and concerns with Russia that we need to be able to sit down and deal with in a constructive and progressive way. I guess we will have to wait until this conference is over and look at the fine print and the results to determine whether that's the way the Obama administration intends to proceed. But if I were President Obama, I'd fire McFaul today. You'd have Stephen Cohen at NYU, a professor, very knowledgeable, very open-minded. Of course he'll be in there to protect the interests of the United States of America, but understands how to deal in a productive fashion with the Russians, and not as McFaul has done so far, making diktats, well, we're going to keep our ABM, and we're going to keep Ukraine and Georgia in NATO.
You mentioned Medvedev's power as opposed to that of Putin. What about Obama's power as opposed to that of some of the operational team that has continued running after the Bush-Cheney administration left office? I mean, we keep seeing names here. John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., he seems to be the source for claiming it would be, quote, entirely logical for Israeli warplanes to fly over Saudi Arabia en route to bombing nuclear targets in Iran. Then on 5-7-2009, Haaretz does a story, quote, Israel denies Saudis gave IDF airspace clearance for Iran strike. Sounds like the same old games are being played, doesn't it?
Right. I think you raise a legitimate question, and that is, to what extent is Obama as much of a figurehead here in the United States as Medvedev is in Russia? I think that is a legitimate question to ask. Because, for example, in the Defense Department, he kept Gates and all of his people responsible for the wars against Afghanistan and Iraq, and we're continuing both of them. At the CIA, he brought in Panetta, but all the people beneath Panetta at the CIA are staying. There have been no changes at the National Security Agency, and as a matter of fact, they're being given increased power to spy across the board on the American people. If Medvedev is a front man for Putin and the KGB and the military over in Russia, to what extent is Obama a front man for the military-industrial complex, the security services, intelligence agencies here in the United States? I think that's a fair question to ask at this time because he has been in power since January, and what we've seen almost across the board, despite the rhetoric, is a continuation of most of the Bush Jr. neocon policy, and by many of the same people who are still there. And again, even at the White House, McFaul is a neocon. Dennis Ross, they just brought over from the State Department to the White House to run Obama policy, not just on Iran, but all of Central Asia. He's a neocon. What we're really seeing here is continuity with Bush, not departure.
International law expert Francis A. Boyle is at the University of Illinois School of Law. He is author of 11 books advising peace groups and nations on questions of war, peace, human rights, and international law. His 11th book, Breaking All the Rules, Palestine, Iraq, Iran, and the Case for Impeachment, was recently published by Clarity Press. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced at our new Talk Nation Radio studios in Storrs, Connecticut. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. You can write to us at TalkNationRadio@gmail.com.